At IETF in Prague, I've seen the talk from Jeff Huston, and I've seen it on for RIPE again when I was listening remotely. And for his surveys, he found that about 4% of the clients that went to the websites he monitored could actually do IPv4 only, IPv6 only. And so if there's like 4% of the people, why am I doing this at the moment? Yeah. So the answer, let me go back. The answer to this is previously has been able to do IPv4 only for a long time, and if you'd ask me, for way too long. We actually need to figure out a way so we can probably test IPv6 and make sure applications work and all those things. So I had started some research in Perforz in the development branch a year ago, and this is currently going to head and will be in line. The reason really is get open source ready for IPv6 here and get it tested. I'm not the only person who is doing IPv6 only experiments. Some vendors do, and as of late, I've actually heard of some sysadmins are trying to do it as well, but they all have quite different focuses. So they are creating IPv6 only side networks at work so people could actually hop on them and test them. And it's mostly to figure out commercial OS, the software, games. So the kind of stuff your kids, your wife or your husband or your grandmother are using, the top 100 websites. And that's not quite what we open source people are looking for. The other thing as sysadmins are doing it, as much as I heard, is currently they're trying not to affect their users. So they've started to do management stuff, internal wiki pages or whatever, and just put that on a V6 address. That's okay for the tech people, but yeah. So my initial set of slides had a couple of more rules. You'll find that the numbering is not, well, there are not all 10 rules in here anymore because I can't do Robert Watson speed. The first one is do not assume anything when it comes to V6. That's still true. And the one case I have for you is I bought a printer and for a very long time I actually checked what's out there on the market and I found one. It had actually passed the IPv6 ready logo test, and I was pretty confident this is going to do V6 by everything they had in the technical data sheet. Printing over IPv6 works indeed. For SNMP, I ran into a problem in that this particular printer is actually losing its time when it's off for too long. So if I'm away for a week on a conference, it's losing its time settings, but I want my scan stuff, so it's a multifunction device. My scan documents have proper timestamps and all those things, so I had a script that would actually check the uptime of the machine. The problem is I send it a packet from one prefix to the same prefix, but I have a very weird setup at home because I'm trying to push things on IPv6, so I actually have three prefixes, and it's answering from a totally different prefix back to BSNMP client, and as it's a connected UDP socket, I never saw the answer. And at first I was actually pondering what's going on until I started TCP dump and looked what's going on the wire and said, oh, I get a response here. Why doesn't it make up to my clients and doesn't show me? And I started to look at the code rather than noticing that it's just a different prefix on a connected UDP socket. So it's fairly simple things that still get wrong even if you have some certified devices. The other features it has, like scanning to email, FTP, desktop, or whatever, is kind of mixed of on V6. On V4, everything is working. On dual stack, everything is working. If you do V6 only, you sometimes have to pretend you want to print first before you're able to scan, which is weird. So that led me to my rule number two at that point, that was report your problems, because I actually went back to the vendor and said, I have these problems. And I had the luck that I actually got it to a person that knew that IPv6 existed. So I got a fairly quick reply, but he wasn't quite sure what I meant with multiple prefixes and asked for some screenshots, and I got to him, and since then I haven't had any feedback even on my requests. Is there an update or anything? So problem reporting is what you know, and that doesn't only apply to my printer, but it also applies to if you have a FreeBSD problem or a general FreeBSD problem. Collect as much info as you can, and for V6, still be prepared to actually hit a person that has no clue about what IPv6 is. And be patient with them. Try to actually give them information, like give them a screenshot of the configuration dialog so they can figure it out. Oh, this is this internal guy who is doing that. He might know about it. And you will eventually get through to an IPv6 person if you're lucky. If you're not lucky, as in my case, there can be no answers. I'm still running on the hope that a ticket system is doing keyword-based metrics, and eventually IPv6 and similar things will pop up and says, oh, we are over the limit of bugs, we need to look at this. Keep prodding, which comes to archive your debugging data. Because sometimes they go over those limits and those people come back to you, or they actually hire a new developer and he starts looking at IPv6. And it might be months later that you get feedback. And you might not remember the case anymore, and it would be really handy if you have your debugging data still. Could tell them how to reproduce data problems. And so really, in case, if you cannot close the case and don't get immediate feedback, save it somewhere. I had the problem I ran into this with a FreeBSD PR I had been looking at. Basically, people were running into weird panics, and I couldn't reproduce that. And a couple of months later, someone came to me and said, okay, I hit this problem as well. This is how I did it. And it took me like 2 minutes to crash my machine. And I was, yeah. And I went back to the original people and said, could you please confirm that this was the case for you and you just didn't tell me? And it was quite handy that they actually were able to go back and see what they had done. So to get a bit into the kind of ISP world or the company world and what I've been running at home, which is basically FreeBSD servers, FreeBSD jails, FreeBSD desktops, and some Windows XP and this Mac here. For most of my services that I started to set up V6 only, things worked smooth, as in my DNS worked smooth. That means my primary DNS facing the world, my resolvers. I do OpenLDAP replication. Everything just ran out of the box. Postfix was great. But then actually problems started. One of the problems I faced during this process was fetching dist files for ports, because there are a lot of open source projects out there, unlike FreeBSD and a lot of the other BSDs, that actually do not have IPv6 enabled on their FTP servers or their web servers or their mirrors. So fetching dist files meant that I basically said, go to this well-known machine and fetch it from there, which means I pointed it at FreeBSD.org, because otherwise you start waiting while it's trying all the servers until it eventually hits one. But for mail, things went really bad when I came to content filters. So running my own mail server, I'm doing things like a Mavis spam assassin, virus scanner, the kind of usual thing that is not commercial and is out there. So for Clem, they actually provide IPv6 mirrors for their pattern updates, which was great. Otherwise, you often for the commercial ones, you even need a proxy or a translation device. So I can connect by V6 to my NAT device, and it's talking IPv4 to the outside, which is what NAT64 does with DNS64. But you pretty much need something. Otherwise, your virus scanner is basically outdated by the time you've installed it. So the first problem I hit was a MAVSD actually didn't want to listen on a V6 address. What's happening is you start research and you find like 4 bug reports in various projects, even with patches, but they haven't been integrated into upstream. That one was actually fairly easy. I applied it to the port, things compiled, things were good. So I went on and got to spam assessing update, and that was just trying to get a file from spam assessing Apache Org, which is IPv4 only. But given I have the NAT64 in place, it shouldn't be a problem. Yet I got protocol not supported, and it also told me twice, which means basically it tried to do IPv4 on my IPv6 only machine. Now, why would it do that? So I went into the log files, and it actually said, like, debug DNS, no IPv6. Why would I have no IPv6 on an IPv6-only machine? Some people are trying to be clever, and they open a V6 socket to see, can I do V6? And they are doing a V4 mapped V6 address in there. So basically, they're trying to do IPv4 with an IPv6 socket, which is fairly valid, apart from FreeBSD has disabled it by default. But if I have no IPv4, this doesn't work. So it basically said, this doesn't work. I have no working V6, so this must be IPv4 only. It didn't actually try native V6, which is basically a bad thing. So you would never run into this if you're on dual stack machine. But this software actually isn't IPv6 ready. Things got more funny, and as you see, it's all Perl. DNS was working, and it still wasn't able to fetch patterns by a simple HTTP request. And this basically boils down to a long list of Perl going down the stack of the entire modules to find, okay, what's at the bottom does IPv4 only. And you do the same thing. You go to the project, to CPAN, and you find a bug report, and it's from 2008. And you say, okay, so people have known this for like 2 years, and it's still not in. This is frustrating, because it's basically giving users a bad experience. I applied the patch and it started to work, and I got back to, my Amavis is running, I have spam assessing running, I have Clam running, great, let's point my mail server at this content filter. And I sent the first mail and it says, boom. So it turned out that if I'm going back, there had been like those 4 bug reports with patches from various people who actually added IPv6 support to this Perl module. And it wasn't really working, so I have no idea what they tested, but they didn't test IPv6. Yeah. So you find those things, so it basically crashed somewhere in there, and it took me another hour or something to fix that. But the bottom line I have out of this entire thing is that with Perl, I have a really bad experience with IPv6. One of the reasons might be that they actually didn't wrap their mind around that they want IPv6 and how they want to do IPv6 in Perl. So all the individual modules started to do it one way or another for themselves. And there's a lot of code duplication, a lot of bugs in there. And I hope the Perl people will figure this out and clean the mess up at one point. So why we are still on emails, a couple of notes if you're going to enable V6 on your mail server. Make sure you have a proper reverse mapping, which you should. If you're doing a mail server on IPv6 only, you might notice some noise that you might not see if you're doing it on a dual stack. So for 3 months now, I have a machine that probably is a window machine that is trying to deliver spam to me every 5 minutes from a Teredo address. Teredo is a Microsoft developed and later ITF adopted transition protocol. So this machine has IPv6, probably doesn't know about it, and is doing mail service and trying to send me spam. So there's spam on v6. The two things in the bottom is my private playground fun. If you're trying to do funny addresses with funny things in somewhere in the address because it reads so well, I'm giving you a good spam score. And just because I can, I'm giving everyone who's trying to send me mail by IPv4 a good spam score. A very minor up in the spam score, actually, which sometimes is enough to actually identify spam. The next thing I've been running into a couple of times has been IPv6 literals. So this is IPv6 addresses somewhere embedded, which people are not supposed to do anymore, but sometimes you want to do it. Out of history, I've been running THTTPD on a circuit box for my web server, which was way enough for those 5 pages. But it actually did IPv6, but it had no clue about IPv6 literals. So if I did a request by hostname, everything was fine. If I did a request by address to that machine, it ended up doing something and some weird things. And basically, it went somewhere in my directories to find data and didn't actually do what it should. And the patch is quite long to actually fix this. But it's my IPv6 only backend. And out of fun, just because I can, I actually put a varnish in front of it, even if I don't need it, to play with it, because load balances some content caches are a good way if you want to add IPv6 to your web presence, because you can do it on the side. You can install it somewhere, get IPv6 to that box, and then point the cache or the load balancer at your IPv4 web server to actually connect there and pipe the data through. Varnish had a problem in that Paul Henningkamp had actually looked into IPv6 addresses very carefully, and he had found this annoying thing out of the RFCs that it says you can do IPv6 addresses like this, which is particularly great if you're running in a shell and need to do the brackets. Thanks for quoting. You would expect that the Unix people would have learned this after like 30 years in their shells. So the only main problem was that if you didn't have a port number after the address, so this here worked, this here didn't, because he tried to resolve it with the brackets. That was a two-line fix that was done in a couple of minutes, but it's something you're running into. When it comes to the shell, SSH actually inconsistently handles the addresses. So if you're trying to SSH to a host and say SSH IPv6 address, that's working fine. But if you're trying to do an SCTP or SFTP, you actually have to do you have to do the brackets. And that means you need to quote around that, so it says it's basically going like SCTP login at quote bracket address bracket quote whatever. And sometimes you have to connect to whatever device or whatever web server by address. Say you want to set up your printer the first time at home, and it's not in DNS yet. I found that Chrome still has issues with taking an address. They are doing perfectly fine when they get a host name and doing v6 perfectly fine, but addresses are different. So rule number 4, what it says is not what it might mean. This brings us to error reporting. One of those things is NTPD. You want a time service over IPv6 as well, and you want to distribute it in your local network. And you get an error message that says, socket option IP multicast loop failure on an IPv6 something. So this is an IPv4 option. This is IPv6. Seems obvious if you look at the code. But if you look at the code, it actually doing IPv6. So it just has the copy and paste error in here, which is OK. The problem is, even after I changed the copy and paste, which is just the printf, I still had the error message here. And it's coming every 5 minutes, and it's still in my log files. And I have no clue why. Going through the slides again, I actually noticed that they are talking about IPv4 here, most likely. So it could be another copy and paste error that they are referencing an IPv4 address here instead of an IPv6 address somewhere in the code. But I have to go and find the sources to look at that. It's just annoying that you get a log entry every 5 minutes in your log files because it's filling your disks eventually. Another thing, yeah, I'm still running UCP. I ran into is UCP gave me protocol not supported, which means it's trying to do IPv4. So now this machine only has IPv6. I checked the source, and the source was IPv6, handled correctly. IPv6 handled correctly. It took me quite a while to figure out I had a port number wrong in my config file, and it couldn't connect by v6, and that meant it did the fallback to v4, which wasn't configured and nothing. So by the time I actually fixed the port number, or the port, I'm not sure if it was the number, but or if it did the lookup for UUCP as in services, that wasn't there. By the time I fixed that, everything started to work. So just because it's telling me protocol not supported doesn't mean that my IPv6 protocol actually isn't supported. So it basically means you have to look everywhere for the possible error. And to show you another example of this, if I'm doing a lookup for people FreeBSD.org, I find that it has a v4 and a v6 address. I'm on v6 only. And I'm trying to do a fetch of a file here. And I get protocol not supported, which means, okay, trying v4 again. But if I'm forcing v6, I actually get a different error message, which says operation not permitted. So the reason was I was on an internal jail that didn't have any outside connectivity and still tried to get outside, and my firewall said, no, you can't get out here. That basically means the thing that you might see in the end might not what it mean, what it tries to tell you or means to tell you, because you're only seeing the last arrow here. And that's the way people have coded for a long time, like a decade now. If they went to dual stack support, is try IPv6. If that fails, try IPv4. If that fails, give an arrow. And you'll find that with a lot of software, and you should be prepared to actually go back and see what it really wanted to say and where the real error was. If you were running TCP dump here, you would actually see the ICMP or whatever coming back. Whois was another one that really confused me that I couldn't force, and I had seen the same issues for a couple of times. Screenshot. Now, this is something that basically just is not IPv6 ready. That's PCBSD going to network configuration and having put an IPv6 resolve by my resolve conf before, and it's trying to pass that. And if you can do hex, you can tell the prefix I'm using because it's in here. But if you're trying the latest snapshot, as I did yesterday when I took that screenshot, it's no longer not ready, but it's ready now because we've added the IPv6 DNS support. So you will find software that doesn't handle IPv6 yet. And that's basically either send a patch or report and get it fixed. If you're doing more stock FreeBSD stuff and you're doing jails, you'll find that this is an error message you might get. Now, why would it actually look for an IPv4 address? The reason here are historical. So this is a historical problem. In the old days, jail was only doing IPv4. So there was some hard-coded logic in there that basically says, list this single IPv4 address. These days, we are doing multiple IPv4, multiple IPv6 addresses, but if there's no IPv6 support in my kernel anymore, it still tries to query it, and my kernel says, this configuration option doesn't exist, then it errors. If you're doing GLS minus dash S, you'll actually get the more modern output, and it doesn't error. It's still kind of bad that at the moment it doesn't give me the list of jails. Another open source thing like Tor that I've been trying to use didn't have V6 support, and that actually meant I couldn't even run it on dual stack machine and connect from my V6 only desktop because it didn't allow me. They have patches in progress now, so some of the projects are actually trying to catch up, and they need help. So by the time they release, if you're interested in that, test it and help them. Another thing you might run is PGP key servers. If anyone knows a PGP key server that supports IPv6, please tell me. Good. NTP servers are hard to find as well. I actually took the entire list from NTP.org, sorted it by public and restricted, and you find that a lot of restricted.gov.mil servers actually support V6, but you can't. They don't allow you to query it or to get there, and there are very few public servers that are currently doing it. So you're running into the problem that you want to run services with V6 and you just can't. This was NFS. Basically, I did an NFS mount on V6 only, and it's doing what I call ping pong punch, which basically is you will find it's doing a syn here, it's getting back a syn egg, where's the egg here, and it's sending back a reset, which is here, and it keeps doing this forever. So I thought, if it's not going to stop, well, I have no idea why I actually sent the reset back. But if it's not going to stop, let's stop the NFS server on the other side. And it went to syn reset loops. And it didn't, and it still didn't stop. And if you, well, that was the command I was trying to run. And if you can see here, I was very patient for more than 2 hours until I rebooted the box. But rebooting the box was the only thing I could do at that point to actually recover. I should mention this was old NFS in FreeBSD, as in we had we still have 2 NFS implementations in the tree, and for head, which will be 9, we switched the default to the experimental one, and I haven't seen the issue since. But it's kind of annoying if your file server is actually, or if your NFS client is actually so persistent that you have to reboot the machine. Other issues I've run into is, like, I've been trying to connect to a port 80 somewhere, and there was no route to the destination. In this case, this is actually a NAT64 DNS64 translation prefix that I was trying out, and I got back the ICMP unreachable, but Telnet kept going on forever. So there is a problem in reporting errors back to user space from the kernel somewhere that I yet have to investigate. So even if you're not seeing an error, there is an error, and it's better someone knows about it. So if you run into those cases, please debug them, please report them, and please make sure they're getting fixed. The next thing is the V4 V6 mapped addresses, which basically mostly is a Java problem. And it says old Java problem here because the first people who were running into this were doing FreeBSD jails with IPv6 back in the time when we committed them to 7. And he actually did really good research on how to convince Java to run with V6 and the V6 only and the entire mix. He built a matrix and he has it on his website still. It's a bit outdated in that it's called Open Java now. Open GDK, thank you. Seems to have some other issues these days that I'm not sure if they're fixed. The next interesting thing is CVS, which is something I would have never expected to actually be broken given the number of open source projects using it. I guess the reason that no one is actually noticing these days that you can't do a pServer checkout from an IPv6 only host is that most people are using SSH to get to the files, even anonymous SSH kind of things. The patch is actually quite long with 200 lines. It's nowhere near going onto any slides. But the thing it does is basically it boils down CVS is doing a get host by name. And that's an old POSIX API, and that has no clue about IPv6. And you still find that in a lot of software these days. So OpenSSL S client was the next one I was running into, and at that point I stopped counting and listing the things. What basically needs to be done, which is a nice project, is to go through the entire tree and find all use cases. And if it's not an IPv4 only program, fix it. Which basically means if you're going to SourceForge and look at the 200,000 or more projects, you're going to be busy for a while. But other things in our tree are actually doing better. They are using get address info, like the SMP client, which I had used to actually query my printer in the very beginning. But I had to patch it before because it said IPv4 only addresses, please, in the responses. So it wasn't actually querying for IPv6. And that's another thing we need to go through the tree and just check all the use cases. To give some, well, it's a tiny fraction here of code, which is very common and was very common in the FreeBSD kernel. It was like, if you include NetInet, that's something you only need for IPv4. That's unfortunately not right, because NetInet is actually the file that gives you all the IPv6, or a lot of IPv6 definitions as well with the nested include, as defined by an RFC. So this here should say if INET or INET 6, and which means basically for most of the user space applications, this ifdef should just go away. So if you're writing code, please make sure do not use the get host by functions anymore. Please make sure that you are not trying to query only one address family unless you have a very special use case. And try to read the RFCs actually and the standards that define the socket API. This rule is something that I put in there. It's 7 now, but we missed a couple. This is something I found the day before I left for Canada. I was basically updating one of my internal machines, which is doing my backup server. And it was doing fairly well with IPv6 only for a couple of while now. But just because it has done doesn't mean it did anymore. So I'm still using Amanda. It gives me dumps with a header in front of, and I like dump and restore. That's just working. And 2.6 was fine. Amanda 3 started to complain in this environment. I wouldn't have expected a software update to actually make things fail. The first thing I found is it was complaining on localhost, which made me check my hosts file. No, there's ::1 in there, and I started to look at the code that was referenced, and it says equals 127.0.0.1, and I started adding ::1 as well, and it still didn't work, and eventually you get down through the Perl code into the C wrapper, and you find they are iterating over something that is IPv4 only. So basically the major version update here killed IPv6 support in Amanda, which is a bad thing.
Bye-bye, can
I tried Bakula, but that's an overkill for me at home, sorry. A lot of sad things are with feature parity. The really sad things are here in the beginning. Two very new and great pieces of software FreeBSD has lately gotten, and both lack IPv6 support. So I'm going to fix this one next week because we are going to need it for the release. In case anyone is interested in HAST, and a lot of people are talking file systems here at the conference, fixing it is probably a minor task, but someone needs to do it, and I think you don't want to.
I don't believe in six, so.
Yet you are in my talk.
Sorry.
Yeah. The classic thing we have is with our CV submirrors. I tried to fix that like a couple of years ago, to actually teach CVSubD, which is written in M3, about IPv6. People are using netcat these days on the local machine, which is telling you I didn't succeed, because M3 at one point decided that the size of a data structure and the size of the same data structure weren't equal. And at that point, I asked some M3 people, and they said, shrug. And I gave up. So it's basically as if you have in C one struct, and you do the size of struct and size equals size of struct, then it gives you false. No idea why. Old software. Okay. Multiple routing tables is another thing FreeBSD is lacking feature parity. There is talk about fixing that now. DHCP v6 is something we have to come up with. It's a bit different than before, but we still want to do it. And as someone asked me on the hallway, IPv6 and netbooting, if you're having a lab set up, if you're doing testing or whatever, it's basically a no-go these days still, which means it's going to be a no-go for a couple of while, because with every network card you're buying, with every network card that's on your new motherboards, you will not get V6 support to actually do net booting. The UEFI standard is actually, they have support for V6 in the spec somewhere, but I am not aware of anything that I've seen working, though my MacBook Pro actually might support it. I've yet to try it out. And if it does, we'll have to fix the FreeBSD loader and NFS root client for V6. So in case you know anything about netbooting machines with V6, I'd be very interested. Okay. Another issue was IPMI for me. I was quite happy getting a new server and IPMI on it and everything, and I've seen DHCP V6 queries on my LAN, and I was, hooray, there is V6 support in this thing, and it actually got an IPv6 address with stateless auto configuration. The web UI works perfectly. SSH worked, but the Java applets to get to the console didn't quite work, and IPMI command line tools over IPv6 don't work with it. I'm not sure if it's actually in the standard these days for IPMI, but my last information was they are still lacking the definition stuff for that. It would not be hard to hack that in, but it's just not working. The thing that's coming up on FreeBSD sometimes is this now Microsofty thingy, which basically lacks IPv6 support completely. A general comment I have that's probably aligning with what we've seen is a lot of open source project, and especially one that starts with an L, they have a lot new feature fairly quickly implemented, but they forget about the debugging tools and proper logging as well. So if you're running into issue, you're alone again, which means like this Linux, for example, has supported the RDD and RDNS. The DNS information with route advertisements and the search options for a while now, TCP dump still doesn't know anything about them. It would be really nice if they would actually update the debugging tools as well if they're upfront, but maybe this is explaining why we are still seeing IPv6 things working, but not quite. As in, yeah, it seems they're doing IPv6, but they don't. But after all this, I have some more good things for you if you're doing FreeBSD. So FreeBSD org had V6 from ISC for a while. I think Yahoo's looking into giving us native V6 as well. FreeBSD update and ports update worked over IPv6. They have at least one mirror currently. FTP FreeBSD org has done it for a long time, both instances have. PCBSD has most of the things on dual stack. And one thing when I tried it out was that I was quite pleased with is the App Cafe, which lets you download software components, PBIs and stuff, and install them. So I just said install Firefox, and it worked on IPv6 only, which was great. As I said a couple of times before, I'm running a FreeBSD IPv6 only desktop, and it's working with some manual configuration, which currently still is DNS, which I hope we are going to fix next week. But in the very early days, I ran into some problems, like Firefox keep crashing under me eventually. Now, if you're starting that from whatever window manager you do, you often don't see the error message. So I started it from an Xterm, and it said something like, resolving of whatever failed. And I thought, Firefox not getting that right. And I started to strip it down, and I disabled all the plugins and everything, and it became stable. I have no idea which of the plugins it was, but one of them made Firefox crash when it was trying to connect to something that didn't do V6. The general comment is, despite you've seen a lot of error messages, that most things just work. Especially if you're in a dual-stack environment, you won't notice many, if any, of those problems. So if you're not a real geek like me and trying to push things, you will not see those problems at the moment. But eventually, people will go V6 only, which means not only the mobile providers will look into this, but other parts of the world, you might run V6 only server or whatever. You might want to reduce IPv4 in your dual stack environment to make it easier for management and not having to do everything twice. You will eventually hit it. So the real reason of this entire idea is to actually catch those errors earlier as a community and fix them to give the open source people a very good experience with IPv6. And to answer my initial beginning questions as what would you have thought of some of those errors, sometimes no, I wouldn't have thought of those errors. If you have experience with IPv6, if you're interested in gaining more experience with IPv6 or IPv6 only, there's FreeBSD in the net or my private email address, so let us know or let me know. And I am certainly there, and I'll help you. It might not be timely, but we're trying to do our best. That's my last slide, which is basically what I call my IPv6 smiley, which is the colon and half of the brackets of the address. So I've now run, I'm actually ahead of time, great. So questions, discussions, I'm here. Yep.
Two things. One, I was surprised to learn that iOS has support for IPv6. I fired up my phone at one point when I was connected to an IPv6 capable Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Which is, yeah, I did that iOS 4.
Yeah.
So that was a nice surprise. Even before
Yeah.
So that was a nice little surprise. But so the port of, you know, the little embedded device is kind of a
yeah. Yeah.
The second one was that many years ago I tried sort of the same approach, and one of the stumbling blocks I had was that NAT-PT was not, which was I guess the older version of NAT-64 is what you're talking about, wasn't really.
Yeah. No.
Is there a NAT-64?
So. Okay, as I said, I'm using it at the moment. For FreeBSD, there should be a PF import coming any hour now. It's in Make Universe, I was told before this session. And some Canadians actually did a NAT64 implementation for OpenBSD, which I've backported to FreeBSD. So once the updated PF import is in, I'll throw out the patch for NAT64. Well, I'll have to figure out one licensing issue with them, and it'll be there. And if you're lucky, it's going to be in 9.0, so people can actually try and use it.
Any prospects for it being not with PF, but with available for IPFW?
Not at the moment, unfortunately. So the other thing, as you mentioned, your phone. Is mobile providers are looking into V6 only for multiple reasons. One is carrier grid nets are not going to, well, they've stopped doing the right thing a long time ago, basically. But the other thing is, if they can get the end-to-end paradigm back and don't have to go through net and have to keep alive to keep the net state up, they're actually going to save battery, so you're getting a longer battery out of V6. By the time it's widely deployed, basically, and you don't have to do net anymore.
Just as an FYI, that would be carriers outside North America are interested in going to a mild IPv6. I get to see possibly with the exception of AT&T, certainly none of the Canadian cellular carriers are even contemplating it yet.
So. I know T-Mobile US, which now is AT&T, had a field test for a long time. I know there's an Eastern European country who is basically complete V6 in throughout the entire country. It's like three providers, and they had some common whatever project, probably government funded. It used to be T-Mobile, which AT&T lately acquired.
Well, they acquired it, but I mean, that's just people.
If they announced it, they'd have to even touch the integration issue.
Yeah.
That's an American carrier. Didn't come across the V6 made for customers.
I'm a Comcast customer. I haven't seen it. The best I've seen from them is that they have a 6-to-4 relay router that's close by. There's three cities that have dual SIP in the US.
It's mostly Colorado.
How many apples is that?
You think San Francisco would be on the list.
Yeah.
So, they keep telling me it's close.
So the other thing is that I'm actually doing at the moment at home, I'm using a tunnel, which is bad, but you can either go to 66Net if you're on DynIP or to Hurricane Electric or wherever and get a tunnel if you want to play with it at home. It's for free. The reason I have two of them is actually I terminate my local one in Europe and I've got another one to the US to actually play with different delays, round trip times with different prefixes in my network and figure out how things are going. Which for FreeBSD I hadn't really a problem, but this one wasn't really happy with it. I'm hoping for Lion.
I've been using 64 to read your dial just recently.
Yeah, you don't want to use 64 to read. You really want to shut that down. So.
But 64 is no more deprecated.
It's not yet deprecated, but they are working on it. Yeah. If you're going back to the very first or second slide, if you're going to actually look up his entire presentation, you will see how bad 6.2.4 and TLVDO are working. And what, so if you're a geek, you can probably cope with it. And if you know what you're doing, you can cope with it. But let's say your family or whoever probably has severe problems waiting for 10 seconds for a website to appear if you're unlucky. So who's doing v6 on FreeBSD? Yeah. Who's planning to do it within the next year? Even more.
What if you have an ISP that's you're at their will? I'll do it as soon as they have a network where you connect to.
Yeah, well.
Or a tunnel.
Yeah. So. So.
No, tunnelbroker.net.
Yeah. So.
I successfully set up Tunnel Broker with just an airport screen.
Yeah. Works. So what I've done in the past in Germany was I had a PPPoE pass-through with the ISP router, and I had a circuit box with FreeBSD behind it, and that tunneled by L2TP to some friendly ISP that gave me v6. So I changed jobs, and I basically said I'm going to lose that and not rely on it. And at the same time, German Telecom said, okay, we are going to do v6 this year. They are a bit late in the schedule, but I said, I'm not going to do any other setups. I'm going to wait to get the native rollout from them and meanwhile use the tunnels, which is the least intrusive thing for me and giving me research opportunities. So any other questions? V6 questions? Previous questions? Great. Thank you. And now someone tell me why I removed my 15 slides.